This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Today, I am so pleased and excited to have Nancy Powell from Herd join me on the podcast. Herd make hard-working reusable bags from waste plastic bottles. The bags come in a range of sizes in joyful and vibrant designs. Each bag is wiped clean, has a zipped internal pocket and a double cotton handle for easy carrying. Herd was launched in 2019 by Nancy, and after working with a range of well-known brands on sustainability, Nancy took all that she learned about bags, packaging and brands to launch Herd, and she has three young children herself. I absolutely loved this conversation with Nancy. We talk a lot about sustainability and creating sustainable products. I found it all fascinating, interesting, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Well, hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. Can we start by you giving an introduction to yourself, your business, and what you sell?
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for asking me to be on your podcast. That's lovely. As I just said to you offline, that this is my first one, so this is quite an adventure for me. My name is Nancy Powell. I am the founder of Herd Bags, and Herd Bags, in fact, this is a Herd bag. It's a recycled bag. They're bags made from recycled products. They are designed to be largish in size, used for swimming lessons, shopping, whatever you like. But they're sizable bags. They have internal pockets, so you can store your keys or your phone or your change or whatever. But they're made from recycled material. So the principle that you can use this bag for anything, but it is reusing what would otherwise be waste materials. And the other idea is that the designs are in vibrant and joyful colours. I think lots of the things before I launched Herd, I noticed that, you know, you go to the football pitch and watch your children play football, you're at swimming lessons and everybody's got their Sainsbury's Super Shopper or their Marks and Spencer's Super Shopper. And lots of the things that we do with the bags might not be that joyful and that exciting, but I think that the bags should bring some joy and some colour and some vibrancy to the more mundane things that we do in life. So it's the idea of great, useful, helpful products, but also using waste materials that would otherwise just be bobbing in the oceans or going into landfill. So I founded Herd a couple of years ago. We have 10 designs now. And 8 of them are in 100% recycled material, which is 16 plastic water bottles. There are 3 different sizes of bags, small, medium and large. All have an internal pocket. And we sell online at the moment and through direct to customer through the online store. But increasingly, we have wholesale customers. Lots of stores throughout the UK, small gift stores, museum gift shops. They go well in museum gift shops. Increasingly stores in Asia, Japan, Conran stores in Japan stock them, a few stores in Korea, and recently a few more stores in the US as well. So they go through wholesale, they go direct to customer, and yes, that's me.
Thank you so much. It's a brilliant overview, and I've got loads of questions, so I think I will start at the beginning, if that's okay, because there's lots I'd like to talk to you about, Nancy. So can you just start by telling us, obviously it's really clear sort of that, you know, what your products are for and what they're about. So what was the actual inspiration to create them, though? I kind of get that you want to create something, made, you know, using recyclable material and bags that are useful as well as beautiful. But what inspired you to actually start that business?
Oh, lots of things. I think, well, my background personally was in corporate sustainability. So I worked for Sainsbury's. I worked for Nestle. I worked overseas in Asia for 5 years. We lived in Singapore and I worked for a range of different companies there. And corporate sustainability obviously looks at the sort of the whole impact of a company and its products. And working in retail, a lot of my time was spent on packaging and bags. I was at Sainsbury's when they did that Annie Hindmarsh I'm Not a Plastic Bag campaign. I spent a lot of time working on Bags for Life. Spent a lot of time looking at different packaging materials. So that was always in my, I always noticed those things. And actually, just before I started thinking very seriously about Herd, we went to Australia on holiday and I noticed that it's obviously a much more outdoorsy culture. People are on the beach, people are sort of outside for leisure. And there was a much more developed line of bags like this. You know, we're using supermarket retailer branded bags, but in more outdoorsy cultures, they had bags that weren't associated or affiliated with retailers. They just had beautifully designed bags. And I sort of had that seed in my head. And then, you know, every household has a stash of reusable bags. And I began to really notice my husband would always go for the same bags. And there were particular things that he was going for. There was one that had a double handle that he really liked. I always knew that my personal preferences was to find one with a pocket because, you know, if you need a pound for the swimming locker and stuff like that. So I could see even in our pile of Sainsbury's or Marks and Spencer super shoppers, we had preferences. And I began to think, actually, it doesn't need to be a supermarket or retailer led product. You could actually, you know, enhance it considerably by taking your favorite attribute from the bags that you do have and putting it into one. And that sort of background, those observations coincided very much with a point in my life and career, I suppose, where we had come back from living in Asia. I had worked sort of full time throughout. I started doing, taking contract roles where I do a year working in businesses on corporate sustainability. And I had sort of finished a contract, come up for a new contract, and the recruiter who had been finding me these positions, I had had a really flexible arrangement. I also have, I should say, I have 3 children. And they're now 11, 9 and 6 at the time. You know, they were obviously a couple of years younger than that. And I remember the recruiter actually saying to me that I had a flexible working arrangement in my last contract. And, you know, if I wanted a flexible working arrangement, I really would need to take a pay cut. And I remember feeling absolutely outraged, because I felt like, well, how could I need to take a pay cut? My experience and my professional skills growing, why would I take a pay cut for working the same hours but asking to start a couple of hours sooner and get home for pickup? And I'd also, I just began to feel that I needed flexibility because I had a young family, but that I was ambitious. And I had things that I wanted to achieve professionally. And I think, like many of the women I have met subsequent to starting my own business, I realized that I would need to give myself the opportunities that I was looking for, because they weren't necessarily going to come to me through a professional environment that I was working in at the time. And it's one of the things that I sort of often say to, you know, there are people who have, you know, who call me now and again, much younger women, asking for pointers and experience, you know, tips, and how did I know? And I thought, well, I didn't know. It's just that things combined, circumstances sort of seem to point in the direction that you don't need to be sort of through and through entrepreneur who has this in their blood. You just need to reach a point where you think, actually, I've got a good idea, I'm going to go for it. So I did.
Thank you. And had that idea been brewing for a while? Was it something that had been in the back of your mind while you were still taking on these contracts?
I've always loved bags. I'm not a sort of particularly fashion conscious person. I've never been particularly, following of trends. But one of the things that I've always loved is bags. Bags that work have given me sort of particular joy. I think bags are something that can lift an outfit. You don't have to try them on. They're never going to be too tight. You're never going to feel bad in them. I've always felt very excited by bags as a product. And I think that, I think the idea that I would, you know, if I was going to have a company and if I was going to do my own thing, it would be bags. Was always a very sensible sort of point for me. So when I toyed with ideas in the past, it had always been around bags. It's just that, you know, the sort of the setup costs and the, you know, the idea of doing like mainstream bags was at the time very inhibiting, but actually then when I put together my packaging and materials experience and my passion for bags and accessories, I was kind of like, well, hang on, I don't need to go in at the top of the market. I actually need to go in at the most democratic point in the market, which is bags that everyone use every single day. So yeah, I mean, I think I had the idea to have a bag business had been percolating.
Yeah, and I guess the timing, just everything just came together.
Everything sort of seemed to, and I also think, I don't know if this is just for women or everyone, but you do reach a point in your life. I turned 40 actually the year that I launched Herd, and I do think there is something about a point in your life where you think, do you know what, I've got enough experience under my belt, I've probably got enough confidence, I'm just going to go for it.
Absolutely. And I'd love to talk a bit about how you actually went about designing and producing the bags. And so, and I guess a question before that is, was the idea from the outset to have some recyclable content within the bags? So were they always designed to be made of recyclable materials? Because I'm only asking that because I'm guessing that that gave you perhaps some additional challenges along the way, or maybe not.
I knew before I started that it was going to be fundamental. I mean, I think sustainability, and that's used to cover like an enormous assortment of issues and products and corporate directions, but I always knew that sustainability would need to be, and I would want it to be, a key aspect of the brand, because I think that certainly working as I have in big businesses where you have an established way of doing things or set of products, and you're now operating in an era where you're trying to adjust that offering and that business to be sustainable, because, you know, wherever you sit on this, it's absolutely fundamental that your business, you know, whether big businesses are reporting on carbon now, they will be very, very soon. There would be no point setting up a business which hadn't already answered these questions. You know, the opportunity in starting from scratch is to start the way you want it to be. You don't have any of that legacy. You don't have any of the, well, this is how we've always done it. You can just do it the way you want it. And I knew that it being from recycled materials was absolutely going to be essential. So yes, I mean, in terms of finding the suppliers and finding the materials you wanted to work with and the people you wanted to work with, Is it more difficult? No, because I think if you're very clear from the outset around, you know, what your priorities are and what are your absolute non-negotiables, then you never have the conversations with the people that might have provided you with something different. So in a way, it always feels, I always felt that, you know, one of the disadvantages some of the other brands, particularly the ones that I'd looked at overseas, had was that they weren't recycled materials. And I felt like it was a miss. I felt for great products, actually, that was simply the build that they needed to make. So as I was starting a business from scratch, that's where I would start. So it was never something that was, and also, you know, one of the things about plastic is that there is a lot of plastic in the world, and that's already made, that already exists. And when I first started, what I actually did was I contacted farms and building merchants to ask if they could provide me with waste feed sacks, you know, because the material that is in the bags is essentially the same material that if you buy a ton of sand or if you buy a ton of animal feed, it's the same material. And my initial idea was, could I take that material directly from the farming or building industry and recycle it into a product? Well, I couldn't, for a variety of different reasons. And one of the major issues was getting the recycled material. The bags, the recycled material for them comes from China, because China buys most of the waste plastic of the world, although it stopped doing so. So lots of those materials are available very readily from China. But I think I had always felt it had to be recycled material, because why would you just bring more plastic in? So that was a no-brainer starting point. First part of your question was around, you know, how to design and create the product. Well, I'm extremely fortunate in that my husband works in advertising, and he works with a lot of freelancers. And so I had said to him, I want a product designer who is in a very similar position to me, who is a woman who's working freelance, who's looking to balance whatever commitments, might be children, might be other commitments, but is not in mainstream work, because can't make that work. So Rich, my husband, was kind of like, okay, I'll have a look around and ask and see if anybody knows. And I've basically met all of the contacts and all of the people that I've worked with through, not through my husband, but through similar means, which is basically saying, I would like to, you know, basically work with and employ and put money into the hands of women who are trying to make their professional lives work, because the mainstream hasn't necessarily been able to accommodate the multiple things in their lives that they're balancing. And so that's how I met my designer. And in fact, the first person I was put in touch with was literally just about to have her second baby. And she said, it's not me, I can't do it at the moment, but let me put you in touch with this other lady. The only thing is, she's in Brazil. And I was like, well, I guess that's not a problem. I mean, we're not sitting in an office, so it doesn't matter if she's in, you know, if she's in London or if she's in Brazil. And that was how it started. I started sort of providing her a brief. She fulfilled it. And we have worked together since. And, you know, we've met a couple of times for drinks in London when she's flying through, but she's now in Mexico. She travels. You know, we're either Zooming or WhatsApping or emailing and make it work.
That's brilliant. Thank you. And thank you for explaining all of that. And for also, I mean, I had a bit of a misconception that using recycled materials, as I explained, I thought might have given you extra challenges. And I think it's fantastic to hear that it didn't, because I think for anyone who has a similar idea, or, you know, not necessarily bags, but anyone who wants to do something sustainably and use recyclable materials, I guess, could also be thinking, well, actually, that might be a challenge. So it's good to know that it wasn't.
For sure. I mean, it's much harder to do it retrospectively, right?
Absolutely.
If you start as you, well, start as you mean to go on, then actually, and one of the things I would add to that is, once you find suppliers, or once you establish relationships and people know what you're looking for, other people find you. So, you know, when I said to my manufacturer, you know, with my first manufacturing run, it was, I think, 45% recycled content. And I had said to them when I did that first run, my ambition is to get to 100% within at least 2 or 3 manufacturing runs. And they were sort of like, oh, okay, right. And then they very quickly came back to me and said, listen, we've got this other product that we could sample for you. It's 100%. We haven't done it with anyone else. Would you be interested in doing some product sampling with it? Because as soon as people know where you are and what you're thinking and what you want, then ideas tend to find you. They tend to think, oh, actually, I know Nancy's looking for X. Why don't we approach her with that? So I think if you're clear what it is you're looking for, what's important to you and your brand, then often, you know, you don't have to do that much work for the things to come to you, has been my experience.
I think you're right. And also, once you've built a relationship with a supplier as well, and you're working well together, to have to start again to look for somebody different because perhaps the first supplier couldn't do what you wanted, it's a bit of a process, yeah, isn't it? To get to that stage where you're working well together and you're sharing ideas and they're happy to come to you, it takes a while.
There's so much invested in those relationships, isn't there?
There is. How did you go about finding your manufacturers, out of interest, Nancy?
Oh, well, I did lots of research. So first of all, I was researching in the UK because from a convenience, logistics, footprint perspective, obviously the UK would be ideal. But whilst we do manufacture woven PP, and I spoke to lots of companies that did it, we don't manufacture it in a printed form. So we manufacture the sacks that would be used commercially, but we don't then go on to make finished products from it. And wherever I, you know, all my research pointed to China, and a couple in Vietnam who I got in touch with. And also, I mean, I used lots of my contacts from Sainsbury's, from Aldi, from Marks and Spencer's, people who I had worked with previously that I knew were still operating in those sort of packaging groups. Now, there were operators in Germany and Spain who I approached, because again, logistically they were closer because they were Europe, but they were printing for companies like Marks and Spencer's, and they were printing in volumes. Your minimum order quantities were off the scale, so they weren't going to be feasible manufacturers for me. But I did begin to get a few quotes from China, and I felt some, I mean, I had worked in Singapore and I had worked in China whilst I had worked in Singapore. And I thought, you know, how do I go about this? How do I set up that relationship? So I actually contacted the British Chamber of Commerce in China to say, listen, I have found a series of manufacturers that I would like to do business with. What is the best way for me to do this? Do I just ring them up? Do I just, you know, email them? How does this work? And they actually were super helpful, came back to me and said, there are a series of brokers that you could use. There are some in the UK who already have very well established manufacturing operations and work with China. And it's through one of those. So my manufacturer is essentially a company in Nottingham who work with China. And so we have this sort of three-way relationship where for sort of design and sampling, we're very much working as a team, but all of the logistics is handled from Nottingham. So I don't have to deal with the shipping, which in the last 9 months, I have been extremely relieved not to have to deal with, because, you know, with Brexit, with coronavirus, with everything, the world of logistics and shipping has been an extremely difficult one. And so that's how I set up my manufacturing relationship. And it is, you know, like you point out, that the relationship is hard. You know, it's well won. You know, you put in the time, you explain what you want, you do samples which don't work, but you know, you do begin to get a feel for the people that you want to work with. And this is one of the joys of running your own business, is that you choose who you work with. You choose, you know, who you collaborate with, who you jive off. All of that stuff is totally your choice. And I find that one of the most liberating aspects of running my own business, is that I work with brilliant people, and I work with people that I've absolutely chosen to work with, and it's a joy. So yes, my manufacturing relationship has been a really, really helpful one. And I think they show, I mean, they're obviously a much bigger business than I am, but they are massively supportive in terms of, you know, helping me achieve what I set out to achieve. And I think this is one of the things that, you know, if you're a small business trying to do good things, you can't often do them first time off the bat, because you don't have any leverage. You're untested. You don't necessarily have a huge customer base. Your brand isn't known. And, you know, if you feel like you want to go further quicker, but you realize, you know, I'm not a big player. I'm not Marks and Spencers. I can't walk in and say, I only want, you know, I want this, this, and this, and that's it. You have to build that relationship, and they have to have confidence in you that you'll pay your bills, that you'll provide artwork in the way that they want artwork. And, you know, it's not every company that actually wants to work with small businesses. So, you know, whilst, you know, not all the control has been with me, in the sense that, you know, there are lots of people who didn't even want to do a quote for me, weren't interested in, because the quantities were too small for them. So, you know, there's another side to it as well, is while I want my supplier to achieve X, Y, and Z in terms of service level, I'm also grateful that they're prepared to do really small manufacturing runs for a small business to see if it can grow, and to see if I can create a market for products that they're not yet making for other people.
Thank you so much for explaining that. And I've actually haven't spoken to anyone yet who's found their manufacturer in the way that you have. And I think hopefully that's going to be really useful to someone listening. Because it just sounds really nice that you don't necessarily have to sort of have the direct contact with the factory, because I guess some of the ins and outs, I think that's one of the things that's hard when it's your own product. If you're the one dealing with the factory, you do have to get into some detail that actually you don't know much about. This has certainly been my experience in terms of the manufacturing and the shipping. You know, you're not always the best placed person to make some of these decisions.
I totally agree. You have to know where you're expert and where you're not, and take the expertise where it's offered from other people.
That sounds like a brilliant way of going about it, and I really hope that someone finds that useful. And talking about sort of choosing who you work with, I know now that you have a team based all around the world. So I'd love to talk a bit more about how you manage that, because I guess now we're living in a world where we're all working virtually, or a lot more of us are working virtually and working flexibly. So it'd be good to talk about that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the pandemic has got everyone doing what I was already doing anyway, and many of my sort of female entrepreneur peers were already doing. I think there's, in terms of how I've established my network, a huge amount of it's done on relationships. You know, you get a feel for people. And I think that, you know, I've met very few of the people that I work with in real life. I've, you know, and that was sort of by virtue of starting a business from home. And then secondly, you know, very shortly after starting it, there being a global pandemic where no one was meeting anyway. And actually, it's been no obstacle to me building a business and building relationships, because essentially the relationship, the successful working relationships I have are built on people doing great work, delivering it on time, and being collaborative in the way that they work. And I think that, you know, you, like when I started with my designer, I felt, you know, we were both unknown to each other, and I felt very clear that the responsibility was on me to provide a brief that was absolutely watertight, that was really, really clear. There could be no, you know, I needed her to understand exactly what it is I wanted in the dimensions that I wanted, what I was looking for. And obviously, since then, we've got a much better feel for each other, and she can now anticipate what it is I want. And if she's got designs that she's been working on, she'll ping a few through to me and sort of say, I really like this. I was in California. I saw these colors. I thought this was really great. What do you think? And, you know, but that takes time to establish. That's something that comes with time. But, and often relationships find you. I find, I mean, social media is a double-edged sword. But one of the things that I have found through Instagram is access to a community of, you know, women running small businesses, establishing relationships and giving each other a helping hand. One of the things, you know, lots of people have found me, you know, one of the things I wanted to do for my second summer was photo shoots with much more lifestyle photography. And then obviously the pandemic happened and I thought, well, we can't do photo shoots. So actually some of the people who had got in touch with me through Instagram, I created a photo brief, put a budget against it, and got back in touch with them and said, listen, you know, I love the images you've got on Instagram. You're a stylist. If I send you some product and a brief and, you know, obviously pay you, would you be happy to create some content for me? And I think it's one of those things that I certainly feel like female entrepreneurs do very well, is work very laterally and kind of go, oh, hang on a second, she's doing this. That's kind of like what I'm trying to achieve. Could we work together on that? Word of mouth is another strong thing. You know, we're both members of Silka's Raise Up Mums business community. I'm very quick to go through that community and find photographers, for example. So two of my photographers have come from that group. And, you know, during lockdown, I would drop bags into one of the photographer's porch. She'd do a photo product shoot for them, put them back in her porch. I would retrieve the bag, still never meeting. And that's, you know, that's just how I think this community of micro and small businesses is beginning to emerge from flexible working. And I find it hugely exciting that we can all kind of go, well, actually, it's not that conventional. And it seems to work. It certainly works for me. My accountants, my bookkeepers are people that I've found through women's business groups and through recommendations from other women entrepreneurs. And I'm, you know, you have a couple of phone calls with them, you have conversations, and you think, actually, you know, this is a good relationship. I'm happy to go with it. So it's very informal, but it works. It certainly works for me.
Yeah, thank you. And me too, actually. And I find that women in business generally are really good at collaborating. I find, and being creative as well, like you say, finding creative ways of working. And yeah, I definitely feel there's a big spirit of collaboration and people thinking, oh yeah, we could do this together, or I could recommend this person to you. That's definitely the experience I've had, and I hope that others have had that same experience, because it feels very supportive and supported.
It really does. And it's you know, there are plenty of people who have, you know, there are people who have bought bags as customers and who have great Instagram followings and are really happy to, for nothing, and talk about the product. And I know they're making content and, you know, they've got sort of to find fresh things to talk about and stuff, but there is a real sense of actually how can we all, you know, create a rising tide that brings all boats up here. And I really, you know, second what you're saying. It feels very much like that, but finding people who are willing to collaborate and support you. And, you know, there are people who did images way back when, and, you know, still you post now and they'll repost things for you, or it's really encouraging. And I've experienced none of the opposite. You know, I certainly don't feel any great sort of competition or challenge from other businesses. It's a really, really vibrant and exciting environment. And I think, you know, there are certainly things that I'm conscious of in terms of, you know, there's another side to social media, which is very judgmental and unpleasant. There's also a side to social media, which is very white and very middle class. And I realize that sometimes I look and think, you know, oh, this, I'm in a bit of a bubble here. How do we sort of disrupt that a bit and make it, you know, make sure that we're checking ourselves on this stuff. But I think it's a good environment. It's a good environment. And I've certainly found it very supportive in building my business. And I hope that I keep sort of thinking, oh, actually, how can I support others? And how can I support others that I'm not necessarily seeing in my own ecosystem as well?
Yeah, thank you. And as you do have a team, do you have any sort of advice on working with a remote team? Because I believe everyone you work with remotely at the moment.
Yeah. Except my husband. I still get all of his advertising knowledge out of his head frequently. Any advice on working with people remotely? I think lots of the, you know, there's lots of conversations around this in the public domain at the moment, because obviously we're at this moment in time where everyone's trying to decide what going back to normal is going to look like, and whether that's going to be people going back into offices, whether it's going to be people staying at home, or whether it's going to be a hybrid of the two. And lots of the issues that people bring up in those discussions around motivating people, making people feel included in something, making sure people are working and not, you know, slacking off, holding people to account, productivity, all those kind of things. And I listen to those conversations and I kind of feel like that doesn't reflect the experience I have of remote working. I work with women who are accountable, adults, juggling a very diverse load, from their family lives through to their working lives through to everything in between, and largely doing that very successfully. I don't, you know, they're very motivated. Many of them are very motivated because they are, you know, very empowered to build their own businesses and do the work that they choose to work. I firmly believe in paying people, even if, you know, if they're people who want product. You know, people who just contact me saying, can I have some free products and take photos? I say, like, well, okay, this is a standard fee, you know, this is how much I pay for that. Because I think if you pay people, you can be very clear about what you expect for what you pay. And I also think that paying creative people, and particularly paying women, is essential. I think there's also a bit of a culture on Instagram and more broadly where there's a sense that lots of people should be really happy to have the opportunity to do something because it's good for their profile. And I think whilst that may be true, women, everyone should be paid for their time and the work that they do. And I think that makes relationships very clear. So in terms of working with people, I think, like I've alluded to, the group that I work with time and time again are people that I work with time and time again because we've successfully found a working relationship where they feel that they're paid for their time. I feel really happy with the work that they provide and do, and we enjoy working with each other as a team. If that wasn't the case, then I probably wouldn't repeat the experience. I would probably just chalk it up to experience and go, you know, I would take that opportunity elsewhere next time. But I'm, you know, I think you do reach a certain point in life. I'm sounding like a very old person, but I do think you reach a certain point in life where you feel pretty confident in who you're going to work well with and how it's going to work and what their expectations are, what your expectations are. And, you know, certainly the more you can be absolutely buttoned down in the detail with briefs, with clarity around what you expect and what the reward is, then there are very few areas for confusion. And as long as you're a communicator as well, I think one of the things that women are really happy to sort of say, it's not quite right, or I was a bit surprised, or da, da, da. I think women, certainly the ones I've dealt with and work with, are kind of like, you know, I'm happy to have a discussion about, you know, outputs or what's going on or what's not quite right in this. And so there's no sort of, you know, mystery. Yeah. I think if you're open and frank in your relationships, then it generally does work well.
Yeah, thank you for that. Now, I'd like to change the topic, if you don't mind, Nancy, and talk a bit more about sustainability, because you know, when I've looked into you and I've looked into hers, I'm really impressed about all that you're doing here. So I'd love if you could explain some of the things that you're doing and why and how. Just, I think it's really interesting.
Well, thank you. It's I think it's, you know, I mean, I've already said this, but I think it's a total non-negotiable. And I certainly feel that the direction of travel for every business is this way. You know, there is a climate crisis. There is a huge amount of pressure on the resources that we have and on the way that we're using them. And, you know, I think it's a license to operate issue. You have to be at least aware of the impact of your products. And I had that mindset before I set up Herd, and I've brought that mindset into Herd. I wanted the bags to be made from recycled content, and that was my sort of primary starting point. And we've got to that point. The bags are now 100% recycled content, which is 16 plastic water bottles. My next my next sort of ambition is to actually close the loop on the product altogether, by which I mean, for each bag that I sell, I pay to have a kilo of ocean plastic lifted from the ocean through a third party, which is an NGO called Empower. And the customers who buy the product from the online store receive a link to a dashboard which tracks the progress of that ocean plastic clearance with their purchase. So for each bag, there's a kilo of ocean plastic being lifted from the oceans. Now, the next step to that, which is something I'm currently working on, is to then ring fence that plastic that is being lifted from the ocean on behalf of Herd customers. And for that plastic to be pelletized and put back into the manufacture of Herd bags, so that the loop is completely closed, so that the plastic that is being used in Herd bags is going. And that is, it's a tidy and it's a perfect communication story. And certainly from my former life, that's how I would have wanted it. Now, lots of the opportunities that you get along the way don't always lead to that perfect story. For example, the factory that I work with in China actually came back to myself and my manufacturer to say, you know, actually, there's a lot of plastic clearance that is coming from some of the rivers that are in our region. Should we, you know, should we use that? Is that the kind of, you know, is that the kind of material that your customers are looking for? Now, 10%, or it might even be 20% of the ocean plastic in the ocean comes from Chinese rivers. So there are so many good things about this. First of all, a manufacturer is going, hang on a second, we have a customer who's interested in this, we have this problem here, let's bring those two things together and create a solution. It's fantastic. Obviously, it compromises that perfect circle of communications because you're not creating the closed loop. But this is what I also mean about opportunities coming to you once you're very clear about what it is you're really, really keen to do. Companies then saying, well, hang on a second, this is an opportunity that you should look at. This is something we're doing over here. Might you be interested in it? So that's one of the issues is in the manufacture. The second is in the end of life. So Herd bags are designed to be reusable bags, but they're not designed to last forever. So they will reach a point where they've reached the end of their life and you want to recycle them. So what I do for my customers is they send the bag back to me at my cost. I pay for shipping and they get a discount code to get 50% off their next bag. Now, what I'm seeking to do at the moment is I can either recycle them just into general recycling, although you can't recycle them on sort of high street facilities, although that will come, you know, with the likes of supermarket retailers, they'll look at different ways of doing that. But what I'm also looking to do is to put the recycled bags into new products. So, for example, one of the things that I'm sampling at the moment is taking those recycled bags and reformulating them into coasters. So they could be drinks coasters when they are mixed together and reformed. So for example, if I show you, I've got this, which is this is not recycled plastic, it's jasmonite, but it's a similar thing, is that you would take all of these different plastic components, which chip down into small things like this, and you create another product and you give it another life. And obviously the life of this is going to be much longer than the life of a bag. So that's another thing I'm looking at. Another thing that, I've just received, hot off the press, are towels, which are, again, they have a 45% recycled plastic polymer in them. And the other opportunity I see, one of the opportunities I see for the brand is diffusing into other waste materials, products which come from other waste materials. I mean, I've already spoken about my heart lying very much in bags. But where you can keep a plastic or a material going by giving it another life would equally be, you know, be of interest to me. And whether that's through coasters or towels or other things, then, you know, that is something that I'm very keen to do. And I think that, you know, sustainability is going to require a lot of creative thinking. It's going to require people to collaborate in the way that we've already been talking about, which is kind of going, well, hang on, I could use your waste, I could do this with that. And you know, another thing that I've got is I have a number of faulty bags that arrive and the handle might have been stitched on the wrong way around, or they have minor faults, which mean that you couldn't retail them as you would the others, but they're still perfectly usable bags. Now to date, those have been going to the hygiene bank. But what I'm also looking at doing is I found a local woman who can cut them down and turn them into kind of A5 pouches. So that you might put sunscreens in, that you might put wet swimwear in, that you might put food in, but just a small pouch that you could put inside another bag, which means that those bags with faults, small faults, can still have a life in another form. So, you know, and another thing would be that we don't have seasons. I just buy bags, you know, have designs, manufacture those designs, sell them, and when they're gone, they're gone, and I make new ones. But I don't have seasons, because that sense that there has to be a kind of seasonal switch and feeding an appetite for continual change is one of the things that I'm keen to avoid. So on multiple fronts, sustainability is, I think, about lateral thinking, as little waste as possible. And that makes commercial sense, right? You don't want to, you know, you want to make everything work as hard as it can for you. And the upshot of that is that it's good for our environment, and it's good for the planet ultimately. And every business needs to be thinking like that.
Thank you so much. I think you've definitely given us something to think about there. I'm really impressed by all that you're doing, and sort of the, because I do think you have to think quite creatively to come up with some of these solutions. And I know you've said you've had input from your manufacturers as well, which is fantastic. You've had these opportunities presented to you, but as you touched on earlier, I think you've had these opportunities presented because you've been really clear about what it is you want to achieve. So that hasn't happened by accident. So
yeah,
I think that's all really inspiring. Thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure.
So we're going to change the subject for a final time. We are getting towards the end of our time together, and I do appreciate how long you spent here. The final thing I'd just like to ask you about is, I've seen that you are stocked, in fact you touched on this earlier, that your products are stocked worldwide, you're starting to wholesale, and I just wondered if we could talk just very briefly about wholesale and any advice you have there, perhaps how you went about it, as I know that it's something that lots of product businesses are interested in, but it can feel a bit daunting, can't it? And it would just be good to know how you went about it, and any advice that you have.
Wholesale is an interesting one. I think one of the key things that I've done, and this is sort of, is that I've advertised from the outset. So, and advertising has driven sales, and I've generated ad sets which generally go on Instagram and Facebook, but I'm increasingly looking to Pinterest because I like Pinterest, and I don't like Facebook. And one of the interesting things about advertising is that obviously it generates sales, but it also brings a lot of other people to you. So most of the PR I've had has been people seeing the brand advertised in the Instagram feed, and lots of the wholesale I've had have been people seeing adverts for the brand. So a lot of it has come to me, and I have not been proactive. Now, the first person, when I launched the business, all I had done, or all my thinking had been absolutely around creating an online store, using Shopify, building the store, getting my product to the place that I wanted it to be. And I had no experience of wholesale, and it hadn't really been on my radar. And then I launched the brand, sales began to grow. And then a wonderful retailer who retailed at Altrincham Market, Lucy Emsley, contacted me and just said, oh, hi, Senior Products, wondered if you offered them wholesale. And I emailed her back and said, I literally don't even know what that means. How does this normally work? And she said, shall we have a phone call? So I had a phone call with her. She obviously stocks a number of different brands. And she said, well, it normally works like this. You know, you sell your product for sort of 2.1 divisible of the retail price. You create a line sheet and minimum order quantities. You then agree whether they pay for shipping, you pay for shipping, or you split costs. You can have it on sale or return, but that's probably not in your interest. And she was an oracle because I knew nothing. And so I said, well, listen, I haven't done this before. I'm really happy to, you know, sell you some products and see where we go from there. And so I did that with her. And then increasingly, I got more brands approaching me about wholesale. And I've applied exactly the same thinking to each of those relationships. And it's worked very well. Now, often when you get big brands come to you, it's not a negotiation. It's great, because certainly if you're getting big box retailers, I mean, the one issue that is often a stumbling block with almost every, particularly if you're talking about global, and particularly if you're talking in the current market, wholesalers, is logistics and the cost of shipping. Now, if you're talking about big box retailers in the US or Japan or places like that, their logistics is built in. So they'll basically just say, we will cover shipping. You just need to, you know, we're just buying the product. The shipping is on us, which is like a dream come true, because that puts all the headache and the cost of global shipping with them. Now, my experience has been, and every sort of person running their own business as a one person band will appreciate this, is that there are areas that you're sort of very able in and that you have a lot of experience in, and there are areas that you don't and that are blind spots. And one of the things sort of certainly on my to-do list is to begin to be more proactive in wholesale, in the sense of beginning to target places where I would really like to be a wholesaler, in the same way that I would, you know, in that I might target PR, you know, creating a bespoke offer, a package. One of the great things about my product is that it's very visual. So it's lended itself very well to advertising, and it's very easy to understand. There's very little story and there's very little to say about it. It often sells itself in an image, and that has been a real, and that would really encourage me to say that the quality of your photography is so important. If you can get the attributes of your product depicted in a very visual way, it does you a huge service, because you have microseconds in front of whether it's a buyer or a journalist or whoever attention you're trying to get. I have done, as with PR as well, I've done very little proactive, but what I have done is get addresses and names of fashion journalists that I really like, and I've done mail drops. I've stood at loading bays with courier cyclists with their helmets on delivering parcels, just to drop in my Herd bag to go to the journalist upstairs. And sometimes I've heard nothing, and sometimes, you know, it's been in an article and it's just the luck of the draw. But one of the things I would say is that if through advertising, lots of people have come to me, and one of the challenges I think for, you know, the next year or so is for me to be more proactive in determining, okay, who would I now like to approach? How will I do that? Where do I feel like I should be stocked? And, you know, go accordingly. Another thing that exists increasingly are the platforms. So in the absence of trade shows, which I've never been to, there are these platforms where, so there's one I've just signed up for in the US called FAIRE, F-A-I-R-E, where, you know, all of the stores in America can access a number of different brands through this one platform and shop for them. And so I've seen an increasing amount of US wholesale trade. Now, obviously, they take a big slug of commission from you, but they also make the process quite streamlined, and they put you into stores that you otherwise wouldn't have contact with. So, yeah, I mean, I'm living and learning with wholesale, and but again, you know, I've worked with lots of people where I'm very happy to stay. I haven't done this before. In principle, super keen. How do you think it would work? What do you need to get from it? What do I need to get from it? Cool, let's go for it. I also think, and I'm going to make this a female trait, so that's probably very sexist. I think that women, and certainly the sort of group that I work with, don't see kind of success in a much broader way than simply profit. I think the way that you kind of, you know, the relationships you develop, the access you get, obviously your sales, but I see the picture as much bigger than simply what do the profits look like. So yeah, that was a very long answer to your question.
No, thank you. No, that's really useful. Thank you. And you shared a lot there. And one of the key things I actually picked up on was, you know, not being afraid to say, I don't know, can you tell, you know, rather than putting yourself in a position where someone asks you to wholesale and you say yes, and you go straight on Google to work out what that is and what you have to do. I think there's a lot to be said for being open and saying yes, but, you know, I don't know, and can you help me? And I think, the right people for you will be open to saying, yes, I'll explain that to you. And this is, you know, and they will give you their time. And I think that's a nice sort of thing to realize as well, that you don't have to sort of pretend that you're the expert in everything. And it is actually okay to ask for help or clarification, sure, or whatever it is.
I totally would encourage people to do that, because also when they're telling you, you will understand from their answer what they need to get from the relationship, what they need, what needs to be in place for it to work for them. And you get to understand the transaction and how the dynamic needs to be established. Otherwise, you never will. And it's very liberating. And I think that, I've said this so many times already, but you do reach a certain point where you kind of feel like, I don't, you know, it's okay to not be brilliant at everything, and it's not okay to not have the answers. I've got enough that I'm good at that I can talk about, and I can be very open about what I'm not good at and where I'm going to need to ask questions. And that's okay. It's totally okay. And if people respond very well to that. I think that, you know, asking questions and bringing conversations often down to the lowest common denominator can be very liberating for everyone, because like every professional environment, there's a jargon, there's a way that things work that you can feel like, oh my God, I don't know, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. When somebody first said, do you have an MOQ? I thought, what is an MOQ? Google MOQ, minimum order quantity. Okay. And if you just go back, well, no, should I? People will kind of write back, haha. Yeah, probably want to think about it. But for most wholesale customers, I would say my minimum order quantity would probably be 10 by per design. But I would also say, if you're testing this with your customers, and you haven't bought from me before, buy whatever you like. And, you know, second purchase. And it's like that with everything, whether it's people you work with, whether it's people who buy from you, you know, it doesn't work the first time round, walk away. I think, you know, if they don't buy your minimum order quantities and they dip their toe in the water and it doesn't work, that's fine. It's all just an experiment. And you can just chalk up mistakes to experience. That's what I'm getting very good at.
Thank you so much. And I really hope that's given people some confidence, because I think part of this does come down to confidence. I know that when I started my business, I definitely was in a position where I was almost afraid to say, it's just me and I do everything and I'm only good at half of it. I didn't feel that I could say that. I felt like I should know it all. And looking back, I mean, why? There was no expectation that wherever you are, and you're never going to know everything, and it's okay to ask questions. I don't know why I ever thought that, But certainly it's much more liberating when you reach a place where you're okay to say, actually, I don't know what you mean, or actually, I've never done that. I just think it's a much more honest way. And yeah, I just think it's, I feel much more at ease being able to say, actually, no, I don't know that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think that the ability to sort of say, you know, I haven't understood that or haven't done that before, but I'm open to it. Tell me how you think it would work. It's actually really powerful. I mean, you're in a conversation with someone because both of you think there's an opportunity. And if the other person genuinely thinks there's an opportunity, they've got an interest in making sure that, you know, you're on the same page. And I've certainly become more confident. And I think that, you know, I think that is running your own business, is that, you know, nobody's observing me. If people think that, you know, I've not done something well, I'm the first person to give myself a hard time if I think I've made a poor judgment, or I didn't get the detail I needed, or somebody asks you a question and you think, God, that's such an obvious question, and I didn't ask that in the conversation. You know, it's all experience, and you will do next time. And nobody will be harder on you than you'll be on yourself. So just, you know, just be open about stuff. People really appreciate it, in my experience.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I guess one final question before we finish, if that's okay, Nancy, because I know I've taken up so much of your time. I really do appreciate this. Is what would your number one piece of advice be for someone else looking to start creating their own products?
Oh, I was thinking about this. Now, I am a massive inhaler of podcasts. I do a lot of like product preparation. And when I do, I stick my earpods in and I listen to all kinds of different people. And somebody that I've started listening to recently, I don't know if you've heard of him, Seth Godin.
Yes, I have.
Yes. And he's recently written a book, and I find it very, again, very liberating, very much in a similar theme to, you know, what we've just been discussing about kind of being, you know, being comfortable with the fact that you don't and aren't expected to have the answer to everything or know everything or be brilliant at everything. And one of the things that repeatedly comes up in his podcast and everything he talks about is the expression ship the work. And this is something that I would really say to people who are at this point where they're thinking, should I, shouldn't I, you know. And it very much aligns with the expression, perfectionism is the enemy of done. It's that idea that you have to be 100% ready to do it, and you have to have all the I's dotted and T's crossed. And what I would probably say is, if you have a product that you really, really think is good, that excites you, that if your customer knew everything about it that you know about it, they would feel excited about your product, then just trust that the other stuff will fall into place, because it will. When I knew I wanted a brand that was made from 100% recycled material, my first product run was not 100% recycled material. It was clear, it was close, but it wasn't. But I knew I would get there within one or two manufacturing runs. There are so many things I didn't have the answer to before I started. And you take a risk. And the reason it's easier to do when you're running your own business is because it's your risk. And if you can live, I can personally find I can live with taking a risk myself better than I can if it has impact on other people. And you just have to trust that you are going to learn a huge amount in the course of your business's launch and establishing itself as a startup. That all those things you don't absolutely have the answer to right now, you definitely will. Or you will find somebody who you can ask for the answer. Because every day you will have a different conversation, you will have a different, you will have a different experience, conversation with a person, you will read a different article, you will listen to a different podcast, and you will know what to do next. But all you ever need to do is the next thing. And, you know, I come back to the thing that Seth Godin said, which is ship the work. If you don't get it out there, then it's nothing. You know, it's better to have something that is 70% as good as you want it than nothing at all. So just get on with it is overwhelmingly my piece of advice. I think if your product, you have to have confidence in your product, but it also won't be your perfect product. You will not launch with your perfect product. And if you do, then you've probably been sitting on it too long. You have to get on with it.
That's brilliant advice. Thank you so much for that. And I completely agree as well. I'm a big fan of just doing it.
Just do it, yeah.
And it always works out in the end.
It does.
Well, thank you so much, Nancy. I really appreciate the time you spent and everything that you've shared. It's been absolutely fantastic. So I will link to your website in the show notes. That's herdbags.com for anyone who wants to go there right now, and social media and everywhere else. But yeah, just thank you. I've really loved talking to you. And thank you so much for all of this.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for asking me.
Really hope you enjoyed this conversation with Nancy. Do come and find me on Instagram or LinkedIn. It's Vicky Weinberg. And let's continue the conversation. I would absolutely love to know what you thought. Please do remember to follow this podcast to receive all future episodes as soon as they're launched. Hi, this is just a little note. So if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.